A pinch of rascality. And this is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, bringing you our absolute philosopher philosophizing for your philosophical enjoyment. It's come to my attention today that we think very deeply about many things in life. And as we were driving up here, the comment was made, I'd like to levitate up here. The comment was made that I'd like to, you know, be deeply into my inner self so that I'd know who I am. I would like to be able to speak my word and have miracles performed. I would like to do all of these neat things. Well, not once did I hear the comment, I want to move my spiritual life into an awareness of who I am. We all want the things before we want the fact. Seek ye first all things in the kingdom of God will be added unto you. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and all things will be added unto you. Now this is a statement from the Bible. Very nice, positive statement. But the statement says, first get your house in order, and then your world will reflect back to you what is in your order. Now, we think, this, our physical house is a mess. Well, no, that's not the point. It's your mental house that's a mess. Our mental house is a mess. We allow our thoughts to be rascals that go and do whatever they want to do and don't behave. Well, this evening as I returned home from a day on the town, I looked in my computer and there was an article given out by our philosophical Filipino friends who had these words from Alan Watts, quite a remarkable writer, and he entitled it A Pinch of Rascality. And I'd like to give you his comments as something to think about, because it's really quite good. It's something to think about. Not necessarily that we believe it all, or that we are going to follow it all in our life, which would be beautiful if we did, but it's something to think about. A pinch of rascality. Once Carl Jung felt that he had met a man with no human failings at all, and he was terribly disturbed because it made him feel guilty. He thought that he should probably take a closer look at himself. Then, a day or two later, Jung met the man's wife, and he ceased to worry about it. It wasn't because she had said, "You should know my husband is very difficult to live with." That wasn't the story at all. Instead, the wife embodied all of those things that were repressed in her husband. Because when you live together that intimately, you begin to share your psychic life. So if one becomes too much of a light, their partner may grow compensatory and become a shadow, and vice versa. So there has to be an element of rascality, but not too much, just a pinch of it. When I come across somebody who does not appear to have it, especially so-called spiritual people who are very pure and sincere, I always suspect that they are unconscious of human nature. There is something about these solemn purists that makes me feel uncomfortable, because I like people I can let my hair down with. The hierarchy of life is something to think about. You may find this disconcerting, however, because then you begin to wonder, is there no perfect human being? Isn't there somebody up there, a great being, who we can all look up to and respect? Or are saints and saviors pretty much like everyone else? When you look closely at the idea of the hierarchy of life, you realize that even someone as remarkable as Jesus Christ, who from the Buddhist point of view would be considered a great Bodhisattva, can emerge at any level. According to the Buddhist idea of reincarnation, we have all occupied every position in the hierarchy, or the wheel of being, as the Buddhists call it, since the image of time they use is the wheel. In this view, by moving around the wheel, you eventually realize that every position to which you can shift is the same position you were always in. While you are shifting, you may not feel there is a change going on, but once you have settled into your new position, it feels like any other settled position always felt. From the inside, we know what it feels like to have a settled position, because from time to time we can change, but as the French say, the more it changes, the more it remains the same. We who live in a fidgety culture are apt to feel that this is an awfully boring philosophy, and that we are not going to get anywhere because there is no real progress. But on the other hand, suppose there is a possibility of real advancement and improvement. Use your imagination to the best of your ability and figure out exactly and in detail where you would rather be and who you would rather be than who you are now. If you work on this for a while, somebody who is ingenious enough will always be able to point out to you that you have left something out and that there is something else you could improve on. You can go on and on, and as you go about this imaginative creation of the perfect life, you will eventually realize that what you are really doing is extending power. The process is very much like the people who are now working on gene manipulation so that a man can direct the future of evolution and we can breed intellectual Einsteins and physical Elizabeth Taylors and moral Sister Teresas. All of these people had extraordinary direction as human beings by virtue of their integrity and ingenuity. And so, some people may look at this idea and think it would be just great. But look how we have extended our power now. We may think it would be good to be in charge of evolution, but along comes the old problem of the three wishes again. How do we know which way is really better? When human beings attempt to take charge of evolution, they do so using their minds and a kind of consciousness that scans the world and looks at everything serially. But the problem is that the world itself is not serial. The world is what we call multidimensional, which is to say that everything is happening all together, everything at once, and going along much too fast for us to take adequate cognizance merely through a scanning procedure. Because scanning is confined to linear limits, it always leaves things out. And these things may be very important. This is why, as I pointed out before, turning the glass into gold may mean that your eyesight will fail or your hair will fall out. When we bring about change with our quite limited vision, and when we change people by altering their genes, we certainly will have a new situation, but it will not necessarily be any better, because we are unable to see in advance the fullness of the role that each individual will play. In terms of projecting power, you will see that the geneticist's power is limited because they have a limited view. If we decide to give them all the computers they need to add it all up so that they will have a complete view of life, we are then placing ourselves in a position to control life on the planet. This is to be the final creation, and we're trying to carefully arrange it with our seemingly vast intellect and omnipotent consciousness. We are to be the master magicians. We are to have complete control over ourselves, and nothing is to happen that is not in accordance with our will. Yet suppose we do all this, and suppose we even manage to will our will so that it is always a good will. I'm not quite sure how we would know it was a good will unless there was a possibility for a bad will. But suppose we have managed, just suppose we have managed. Ultimately, you must ask, do I want to be in that kind of a situation? In other words, think of where these directions we speak of as progressive are really going, and extrapolate on them. Perhaps you will say, of course, I wouldn't do that because I realize I'm never going to get there. But even so, why are you heading in that direction? Are you sure it is a better direction to go in? After all, we kill more people with cars than we do with wars, and you have to think about things like that. I'm not arguing that we should not have technological developments, but perhaps it is short-sighted to conclude automatically that they are improvements. They may not be improvements at all in the long run, and so it is very important to consider whether you want to control the direction in which you are heading. It's full of surprises, isn't it? Inwardly, do you really and truly want to have power over everything that occurs within the sphere of your consciousness? Perhaps speaking as a man, I would like to cast a spell over a woman so that she would become exactly as beautiful as I could conceive beauty to be, and so the very inflection of her voice and gesture would obey me like a violin under the hand of a perfect master. I would entirely direct her activities, although in every action she would be my dream. I would quickly begin to worry about this Frankenstein woman. I would think that perhaps there was nobody home, and that I had done it all. All I had done was to create a machine. When I think about it, what I really want is for her to do something that I don't expect. This is one of the reasons why it's so nice when we have an occasion to give gifts. We love surprises, because a surprise means that there was someone else there, someone who made it fun by doing something that we could not have predicted. I've heard people who think that in the future, due to our psychic development, we're going to be able to read each other's minds through direct transference from one mind to another. We will have access to everyone's thoughts, and there will be no privacy left. Of course, since everybody will have complete transparency to everyone else, we won't be able to surprise each other. Personally, I'm not looking forward to that kind of a world, because I'm afraid it will be quite devoid of spontaneity. We may lose that little element we call vitality. Now, this may sound as if I'm saying the best sort of thing is not a universe where we realize that there is a profound underlying unity through all things, but rather a universe that is pluralistic, that is not one at all. Certainly, it may be said that one of the best parts of life is having lots of separate things, all surprising each other. But I see still a different scheme. The world I see is what we might call unity in diversity, what we call self and what we call other are like something and nothing. They are fundamental polarities, which just because they contrast with each other, have something in common. We cannot say what it is, though, and therefore our world will always be full of surprises. From Alan Watts. He's a great thinker, great mind in the steps into the beyond. A man of tremendous imagination and vitality and wisdom and genius. But as with all men of this remarkable talent, we enter into a state of confusion. We enter into a state of intellectual jargon that has left us with something very interesting to think about, but with no relativity of how we can work in our mind to utilize it. Now, how can you use this material that you've been given here by Mr. Watts? It's charming, charming writing, charming words. They are very proclaiming, very making you feel very comfortable. But think about this. So long as you are going to be doing as he suggests here, And so long as you're going to be doing like Carl Jung suggested, and many of these other great and wonderful minds, you'll be living in a world of confusion. And the reason you're living in a world of confusion is because you have not come home. You have not come home to your own inner self. Now, we teach the allness of everything. And Alan is speaking here, saying about the Buddhas, who say that the wheel of life is such that we go through every experience that life has to offer, and we've been there, done that at some point in time, and apparently we're redoing it again and again. Now, to me, that is interesting, but a long way from something important to be said. I believe that we live in the now. And living in the now, we do not live in the past. Now, all of these other teachings we've been studying are exquisite. They are a theory that has been developed over the years by theologians and theorists, and they're fascinating. The Big Bang Theory is a fascinating theory. The theory of the ideas that Einstein has presented, you know, the theory of relativity and so forth, are very fascinating. Very, very, and provable. And they will be provable. In fact, I have offered theories myself in past times, which have come to pass. And people have said, wow, you're good. And not really. I am the revealer of my own inner awareness. I'm not the creator. It's already there. Everything already exists. I'm just living it myself because of the joy of living it. When I read the story of the life of Jesus Christ, I'm living the life of Jesus Christ. I'm there. When I read the story of King Henry VIII, you know, or when I read the story of Nixon, I'm living the life of these people. And I am Nixon, I am Henry VIII, I am whoever it is I'm reading about. And it's wonderful. You have all had that experience. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to make a change in what those people have done. That doesn't mean you're going to revise the past and revise the future. It means that whatever is your personality, listen closely now, whatever is your personality is how that character is going to live its life. If you are King Henry VIII, whatever your character is going to be the character of King Henry VIII living in your consciousness. You may see him doing many interesting and odd things, and very good things too. He was not a bad king, totally. He had some strange ideas, but he was not a bad king. And this you can tolerate. This you can be. But if you were King Henry VIII, you perhaps might have a different attitude about humanity, about life, respect for life. And then again, you might not. Because living in that time, the respect for life would be whatever it was. And if you came along with a different respect for life, then you would be like an Akhenaten. When Akhenaten came into power, he was contrary to his father. Remember? His father had many gods, and he promoted many gods as the Pharaoh of Egypt. And when Akhenaten came into power, he tore down all of the symbols of gods, and he put up the one god, Aten, the sun god. Now, we look at, say, the sun god, you know, and, well, hey, no, it's a one god. That he had a worship of the one, and this is what Moses did too. Moses said one God. He did not like the many gods of the neighboring tribes and the things they did, but who's to say that Moses was right and the people in other tribes were wrong? I mean, certainly the people in the other tribes went to their highest and best understanding, you understand? And Jesus, he said, I have many flocks. He was indicating that his work extended far beyond the Jewish nation. And I think the priests understood that. And that's why they didn't want to have anything to do with him. But you see, in its time, it's as we are these people, as we are living their life by either reading or being or in consciousness, we are living at their consciousness, at their level, at their experiential world. And how do you do these things? How do you do these things? As I have said, the people that Jesus taught were Jews, and Jesus was a rabbi. And he did not come to destroy the law and the prophets, but he came to give them two new commandments. He did not go in there and blatantly take the Jewish faith and say, it is no good. He went into it and took from the Jewish faith that which supported the theories that he wanted to promote to the people. And he found them all in the Bible. He found them all in the teachings of the Hebrews. And this was true of every nation. Now, you see, when you read something like this here, which is a very human and a very touching thing, you lack one element, and that's the element of being there. And when we are living in the element of being there, then we make no judgment. We live in that awareness, and we are that awareness. So if you are living in the element of being, let's say, Joan of Arc, and your life direction was nothing, and some inner voice spoke to you and said for things for you to do, and you said, oh, hey, that's my inner voice speaking to me, it must be good. And then the inner voice listed itself by the name God. Said, oh, God is speaking in me, God must be good. And so she went to the king and told the king that God has directed her to guide the armies of France. And the king says, well, we're losing, can't lose anything more, go ahead, give her a try. And she went out and won all the battles. She won it to the glory of God. Now, if she had been killed on the battlefield, she would have been a saint immediately. But because she continued to live, she ceased to be a saint because the church could not tolerate a living saint. And so they had to disparage her, destroy her, or to say anything they could to belittle her. Now, there's nothing wrong, absolutely nothing wrong with that, what that girl did. She merely spoke from the divine within her. Think about it. What do you think of Solomon? When Solomon said to the two mothers who claimed the one child, let's cut him in half and you can each have half. You know, what do you think? Well, that's cold, that's ugly, that's mean. No, it gave the real mother the opportunity to say, no, take the child. Take the child. She was more interested in the child than she was in her own possession of the child. And you see, that wouldn't have been known. That wouldn't have been known to the world. That very tough decision. But the king, he listened within. He said, my God, yeah, my God, I must give a decision here that is going to teach them a lesson as well as preserve the child who does not deserve to die just because these two women are being a bunch of cliques about it, you know. And so the divine came to him, the divine idea. And it says, tell them that you will cut the child in two and they can each have half. And you know the real mother will not allow that. You know that. If the real mother did allow it, he would be very surprised, you know. But human nature being as it was, the king knew that. King Solomon knew the real mother would have. And you see, he was a king. And he was God. And he knew he was God. He knew he was the God King. And so he trusted his inner belief. He didn't listen to his ministers or counselors. He trusted his inner belief. Now you see, this is the difference. Now you're a king or a queen. You're a king. and you're in charge of your world, are you trusting your inner belief, or are you immediately going to run to the medical textbook to find out interesting things about what you're doing, what you're thinking? You see, now, as I talked to my brother Ray, and he was telling me that he has pneumonia, I say, Ray, why didn't you call me and tell me right away when you experienced this problem, and I would have spoken my word, and you didn't have to go through all that. He says, oh, I'm doing just fine. He's enjoying himself. Quite likely, if Ray were able to kill himself right now, and through that noble means of pneumonia, that he'd be very happy about it. Because he is going blind, he has lost his best friend to his care because he needed too much care that Ray couldn't give him, and on and on. And so he perhaps would be quite content stepping out of this life adventure as a noble being, not as a sick old man, or not as a blind coot, you know, that can't get around anymore. You see, how do we know? Now, Herb, that's not being very nice to your brother. Why don't you say, you see your brother whole and perfect. You see your brother's eye is clear and sharp and wonderful. You see blah, 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 blah. Why don't I say that? I do. Then why are you telling us this sort of thing here, in this sort of a way, in this talk, talking about your own brother that you don't... Hey, because this is not the truth about him. This is not the truth about you. If you see my brother sick and sorry, you're sick and sorry. Do I see my brother sick and sorry? No way. Do I see him doing his little game that he wants to play for a little while, and pretty soon changing his mind, saying, hey, I'm really enjoying living, you know. There's no reason for me to shuffle off. I've really got everything together. I've got a nice pension to live on. I've got a nice house to live in. I've got good friends in my neighborhood here. My best friend is a 96-year-old neighbor, and he is just such a joy. You see, but occasionally you feel sorry for yourself when all sorts of things tumble down on you. And then you let pneumonia or some other silly thing come in. But pneumonia or illness is an approved, bona fide way to slip out of this mortal coil. It's an approved way to die, but it's not like putting a gun to your head. If you put a gun to your head, people say, oh, that's terrible. But if you put pneumonia to your head, people say, that's too bad, you know. But you have as much control over the pneumonia as you do over the gun, perhaps even more, because the pneumonia, you have to spend a little time developing its presence and power in your system. You have to give it the gate, whereas the gun, it comes as an instant inspiration of how to end it, and that's foolish too. But what?
Crazy.
It is crazy, but this is what we do. We invent these games of life, and we invent the games of death. And you see, this is the pinch of rascality that is about us. If we were living our lives so harmoniously and beautifully as the divine within us, we would not ever think of death. We would not ever think of illness. We would not ever think of lack. We would be living in such a harmonious abundance consciousness. We'd be living in such a wonderful attitude of life and joy and peace and harmony that those things would not even be of interest to us. So we would not think of them. How many of you listen to the news? Now, one of our students said she falls asleep with the news on the television because it keeps her from thinking about her own problems. Well, it sure does that, but it also puts what you think you cannot handle, the world's problems, in your mind. And you don't want to do that. You don't want to do it. If you want to turn something on, turn on a good music. Turn on a good concert piece and play it loud if you want. And go to sleep with that roaring through your mind and blending into the harmony of your soul. Wow, you know?
Yeah.
But why listen to a commentator talking about the problems of the world? Now, we have the choice. And can you see how we choose that? And can you see how those who listen to the Spirit, the Divine, the goodness within them, live a much more charming life. Yeah, think about it. And we were talking about the people who use the handicapped program in their cars and stuff. And every morning I get up, anywhere from 11:30 at night till 3 or 4 in the morning, maybe 5, and I take a walk around the property here. A 3-mile walk up through the mountains and down through the blackness of the night or the moonlight or whatever might be there, and it's wonderful. Here I am in just my moccasins and walking around like that, and it's wonderful. Now, could I validate in my consciousness having a handicapped thing in my window of my car, allowing me to park in the handicapped position because I am disabled in some way? Because mentally I'm disabled, that's for sure, you know. Mentally you're disabled for parking there in the first place. But why can't you walk a little bit and get a little exercise once? As Ellen says, when we're on our tour of seminars in Europe and Africa and wherever we go, we sometimes put on a little weight. Not because the food is so good, it's okay, you know, but because we walk to the lecture, away from the lecture to the car, and, you know, we walk up to the platform and back down, and we walk into the house and out of the house, and we don't do our normal walk around the property and the other things that we like to do so much. But we don't really need that walking to keep us in shape, but unfortunately we think we're missing that walking. We miss that delightful experience. And because we miss it, then we equate that as putting on extra pounds, which is a silly thing for us to do. But you see, we've got this all pretty well programmed out. We know pretty well what we're doing, and it's pretty silly. So let's think about that. Alan Watts, thank you for this wonderful dialogue here. You're a brilliant mind and a beautiful soul, and you have contributed much to the thinking of man. But I would like to suggest that rather than our reading Herb Byerly or Alan Watts or anybody or even the Bible, you stop and meditate and start reading the Bible in you and start getting the answer that King Solomon got when he was faced with the two women who claimed the one child. And he said to himself, "Boy, this is an interesting one. How do I speak to this?" And the voice inside of him says, "Tell them you'll cut the child in half, which you have the authority to do. And see what their response is. You don't have to do it. If they decide to let you cut the child in half, say, 'Both you women go to prison. You're sick, sick women.'" And when Abraham was told by the Spirit of God in him to sacrifice his favorite son, he put him on the altar. He did all the things that he was told to do. He really listened. And then, before he struck the match, can you imagine Abraham having a match? Before he prepared the fire to start and sacrifice his son, the voice spoke to him again and said, "I believe in you.
Oh, my beloved son.
There is a ram caught in the woods. Release your son. Put that ram on the altar." And you see, when we believe, when we live in the consciousness of our own inner wisdom, then we don't have that pinch of rascality about us. We have the pinch of reality about us. This is your absolute philosopher sharing with you a few ideas, and they never end. I love you. I love you. I love you.